time for In and Around the House with Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. Now, let's join Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown for In and Around the House.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center because it is going to be raining. Or at least, that is the Al Sleet AccuGuess forecast.
Guess it up, brother. Good morning, Ernie.
Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing dandy,
as
you would say.
You've been working out?
Oh, yeah. I have been losing a little bit of weight.
Now,
watching what I eat.
Yeah.
You're noticing. That's good. All my clothes look a little too big on me, maybe.
I wasn't going to go that far. I was lying to you.
Well, that's all right. just like you do with the forecast.
Yeah.
Lay it out there. Call it the way you see it. If you don't see it, make it up.
Make it up. That's exactly right. Yeah, there is rain in the forecast today, and the word on the forecast is rain is likely. So make your plans accordingly. And I saw you posted some pictures on our In and Around the House Facebook page. Boy, the greenhouses are full.
Yes, they are.
And looking awesome. What kind of stuff did you guys get in?
Color. Yeah. Hanging baskets, vegetables. We got petunias, angelonia, vinca, heliotrope, Gerber daisies. Dahlias, you name it. It's all rocking. It's showing color.
Yes.
I love this time of year.
Yeah.
You know, when I walked inside downstairs to the studio this morning, I'm looking at the Nepeta, Walker's Low. It's blooming downstairs.
I noticed that too.
I bet you did. And also the roses are starting to bud up.
Oh, yeah.
Just everything's there. It's looking great. You know, it's that time of year.
I remember last week we were talking about azaleas and how beautiful they are. There is a woman on Buttermilk Pike as you leave our house to head toward the expressway on the right-hand side. And I meant to stop and take a picture. But she has, in the front of her house, probably 5 or 6 gorgeous azalea bushes that she keeps trimmed like hedges. So right now, there is just this big wall of color out in front of her house. It's gorgeous. If I get a chance, I'll sneak by and
you
take a picture.
Do that. Don't get in trouble. Don't freak anybody out. Don't get too close to the house.
Yeah.
I don't want to read about you in a police report.
Call the police. There's some big old fat hippie guy out front taking pictures.
There's something wrong with this guy.
Yeah, and her husband will say, well, we don't have to worry about him running.
Look at him. Can't run too fast. Tase you.
Yeah.
But you know, you're right. Azaleas. Actually, this year, I've had more people ask for azaleas than I'd say the last couple of 5 years. It's interesting.
These have got to be the happiest on the planet right now because they're just in full bloom top to bottom.
That they are. One of my favorites, too, it's been around for a number of years, is Karen. Those beautiful lavender blooms.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had a Facebook question the other day about someone had taken a photo of someone's blooming azaleas in their yard.
Mm-hmm.
They were white azaleas, which I love the white because they show up so well in a shade garden.
Yep.
You know, you get that morning sun on your azaleas, they'll love it. And make sure you plant them in a lot of peat moss.
Yeah.
They like that acidic soil. And when it comes to the white azaleas, you typically see one of these two, for the most part, is Delaware Valley White or Girard's Pleasant White. And I couldn't probably tell the two apart, nor can most people, but nonetheless, beautiful. When they're in bloom, you can't beat them.
Well, the rest of the forecast is not bad. It's just today is going to be rainy and cloudy. Tomorrow, sunny and 67. Monday, of course, this isn't that always how it works. When you return back to work, the weather improves. Sunny and a high of 72. And then Tuesday, sunny and 76. It's even warmer on Wednesday, but some clouds drifting in with a 30% chance of some showers on Wednesday, high right around 80.
You're awesome with the forecast.
I got
to
make it.
You were trying to get
go.
That back in there. I didn't mean to go off on
another
topic. I could just tell you just wanted to get back in there and throw it out.
Just Wanted to make sure that our listeners are well-informed and make their plans. And as I mentioned earlier at the top of the broadcast, perfect day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden
center. It's one of those days you're inside. You know, when I want to go back to the forecast element. When you throw it out there, Al sleeps. Ernie's our hippy-dippy weatherman. I want to see you, like, walk behind the glass over there and do the old Ira Joe Fisher
approach.
Remember that cat?
Oh, I do. I do. He was great.
He was. Yeah. He had a knacky ability to able to write backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very freaky because...
Ira Joe Fisher. What station? Who was he with?
I think it was Channel 12. I don't know. And it was that long ago.
Hey, talking about going back in time, one of my favorites, Tony Sands.
Yes.
Yeah. Remember? Mm-hmm. Wasn't he with Al Shadokati? Yeah, that's going back some time. But going back, I just like to see you go right there behind the glass and just give it all up on
maybe
the
we'll get John, our producer, to film a little something. We'll make an attempt to that, and then you can explain to management why there's Sharpie marked all over there. What's all over the window?
I don't know. Use something that you can erase.
One of those dry erase markers. Yes. We'll try that. We'll give it a shot.
That might be interesting. We'll do the whole tri-state area as a map.
Yeah. You can have that. Good idea. Maybe at that point we can start adding the locations of all of our leaders.
You know what? That might be a good idea.
Our local leaders, all of our local garden centers, and put that up there. John is shaking his head. You know why he's shaking his head? No, I'm not doing that.
We are in here just once a week, but we still, it's important that we take use of that glass window. Right,
I'll tell you what, my theater director and professor at Northern Kentucky University back in the day used to say is you've got to occupy your space.
You do that well.
Well, I take up a lot of space, according to my wife, Lisa. But you got to occupy it because somebody else will if you don't.
Ah, that's right. So what's going on around your... around your house, around your landscape, you battling anything? You struggling? You need intervention? You need help?
No, I again have to brag about that weed-free zone. I was just absolutely amazed and thrilled that it cleaned up the wild violets that were in there. It did help get rid of the creeping Charlie that I'd always had an issue with in that front part of the lawn.
Right.
That's gone. The dandelions are gone in that area, and now I have to get down and get a restock down at your shore and tackle the backyard. The grass is just gorgeous, though. I mean, it is lush.
Looking good. It really is. It's starting to really look good. You can just see a lot of growth coming on. This cool weather.
Right.
This is a nice little cool down, too, when you're talking about the temperatures and so forth. And we needed a little bit of moisture as well, I think. And it's there. So hopefully today it's not a washout. It's just, a couple of nice little steady periods of rain.
Yep.
Not a bad thing. But I'm like you. The weed-free zone is like spot on. And our good friend, one of our followers of In and Around the House, Jeff Kimmeter, came in the other day and he bought three quarts.
Yeah.
Just swears by it. You know, and your testimonial finally, I'm glad you came around and finally used it.
You can go ahead and say, I'm glad you started listening to me, Ernie.
Well, it's only been 6 years, but better late than never.
That's exactly right.
I'm all in there with you. And I'm glad you had the notes from back in 2012.
Yeah. 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about you can add instant color to your landscape, to your home, to your porch. And we haven't talked much about the window boxes and stuff like that. We'll start that conversation when we return. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we were mentioning about color and how you can get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center today. Rain's in the forecast. This is the perfect time to go down, make some selection, pick up your supplies, grab some gorgeous flowers, and get ready for tomorrow because you'll be able to get out and do a little planting tomorrow. And Tony was mentioning about all the beautiful plants that have arrived at all of our local garden centers.
Oh, a lot of color. You know, I posted on our Facebook page one of the hottest items going, bar none, is a petunia called Night Sky.
Wow, that sounds cool.
Did you see it? Did you see it on the Facebook
page? I'm on the page now.
Oh, it's really cool. And it's a purple petunia. It's not a dark purple, but it has like all these little white blotches on it. It just looks like you're looking up into the sky and you see all the, it's just glittered with stars. And so you have these little white blotches. They're all various sizes on a petunia bloom. It's just so cool what they can do when they breed different plants, you know, when they cross things and hybridize things and what they come up with. But this is one of the items. I mean, people have been buying this petunia by the flats. I can't keep it in.
Yeah.
It was introduced last year. And when you get new introductions and you're in the garden center world or, you know, the nursery world, so to speak, you don't always get your hands on this stuff, nor is it readily available all the time. You know, it's limited when it first comes out, but you're going to see more of this, you know, especially this year and next year. Really a cool petunia. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and just say, hey, do you have any Night Sky petunia? I want to see it because Tony and Ernie were talking about it. And they were hyping it up. It's hot. So definitely look for it. Yes, I like it. I thought it was really interesting and posted it here on our Facebook page.
And you can just imagine that in someone's landscape. Or we haven't really talked too much about porch pots and window boxes.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you could plop in there and really change things up.
It creates a lot of interest, you know. And I'm glad you brought that up, too, because
that's why I'm here.
Today, although we kind of have a little bit of rain in the forecast, it's going to be a little damp, somewhat cool. And, you know, here we go. We're going from one extreme to the other. I welcome this to a degree, but not on the weekends. You know, I want to stay busy. It makes for a faster day, and especially for Saturdays.
And as a motorcycle rider, we always think, wouldn't it be great if it just rained overnight?
Well, yeah, so I guess that would be, unless you're a night rider. So, absolutely, I can see your point there. You know, but today would be an ideal day. And days like today is when your true, true avid gardener is out in the garden centers and the nurseries because it's not crowded. And we've said this before in the past, a lot of times we have what we call yardeners.
Yardeners.
And they're the ones that see the true gardener across the street doing something, walk across the street. Hey, what are you doing there, Joe?
Yeah.
Planting all these perennials, Solomon seal, whatever. Yeah, I think I might do that. So they go back home. Hey, hon, let's go down to the garden center. So they follow suit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like playing cards.
Sure,
you got to follow suit.
Yeah.
But today, days like today is when your true avid gardener gets out. It's not crowded, and they can take their time, and they can shop, and without all the hustle and bustle. So those of us that have greenhouses, this is where we really benefit.
Sure.
You know, you can still come into the greenhouse. It's comfortable. You get to see a lot of color, see what's new. It's exciting.
And when you open those doors, there is a certain garden center greenhouse fragrance that just strikes the chord for you, puts you in the mood.
And, you know, there's a lot of fragrant things and flowers out there, don't get me wrong. But Bob Bard and I talk about this all the time. One of the sweetest smells is the soil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can. It's so distinctive, and there's times when we'll open up those big bales of soil, and you can just smell it on the other side of the greenhouse, all the way on the opposite end.
And I don't know what this is, but I can remember growing up and playing Little League non-hole baseball out at the Taylor Mill Boosters Field, but there was something about a fresh rainfall that just overwhelmed the senses and was just fantastic, the smell. You know, it was just awesome. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that a lot of people feel the same way about different things when they come into the garden center. But you mentioned a couple of weeks ago the pink blooming phlox that has a stronger aroma or fragrance than the purple one. What was the name of that again?
Oh, you made me think here. I think Drummond's Pink.
Drummond's Pink.
Yes.
And I've got to come down and get some of that, too.
Well, I don't know if I have any left on hand. Actually, you're starting to see phlox. You're going to find phlox in a garden center that will get in, that's coming from up north, perhaps, is still tight in bud and showing color. But those, you know, you're starting to see some of it fade off just a
smidge. That's okay.
But it's still there.
I'm
don't let
I'm
that deter
looking
you.
Ahead. You know, I just don't want to forget
yeah,
that.
You're proactive all the way. That's what I like about you, you know? I got to get up awfully early to pull one on you. But you did mention something about bringing color to the home or another element outside on a patio or mm-hmm. be at the front porch, the deck. Deck rail, planters, you name it. It's those exactly. You know, it's container gardening and it's still hot. It's one of the biggest trends still happening in the gardening world today. And it's it's easy to control.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're not always having to get out on your knees and hands and all that stuff and you know, crawl around in the landscape beds. You know, you're working with containers or you're standing upright and you're planting up deck rail planters or window boxes. It's a little easier on the back when you're kind of standing up and you're getting artistic and creative and putting these combination planters together.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing combination pots, planters, and window boxes, this is so, so important. And I think this is a great day to talk about it. And it's buying the right soil. There's so many different varieties of soil out there. It really gets confusing for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to simplify it in just one sentence. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you what that one sentence is going to be. And if you have any questions about your window boxes or containers, give us a call here at 749-B105. I'm Tony Wirtz with Ernie Brown, your local home and gardening guys, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It'll be a great day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. We're talking a little bit about adding instant color to your landscape, to your porch patio, your window boxes, or big pots that you may have sitting around. And Tony brought up the importance of having the right soil in the plant or in the pot.
So important. And here's the sentence. It's two soils I want you to combine together. And the first being Fertilume's Ultimate Potting Soil.
Mm-hmm.
It comes in a red bag. You can't mistake it for any other soil. And also Garden Magic Topsoil. And I'm going to tell you why I like to mix the two, and it's for this reason. Those of us who are very familiar with our soilless potting mixes, they are primarily comprised of a sphagnum peat moss, some perlite, maybe there might even be a wetting agent in it, and in some situations, just a little bit of bark sometimes. So, you know, that's what most growers will grow with, and plants do relatively well in it. It's all engineered and put together with certain pH levels for mm-hmm. whatever it is that you're trying to grow. So a lot of growers locally will use these special mixtures. So we call these soilless mixtures, and they can have a tendency sometimes, if you're not on your game, to just ever so slightly dry out. And you'll notice that just if you look at the side of your pots mm-hmm. sometimes, it just ever so slightly shrinks away from the side of the pot. If you ever water something and the water immediately comes through and out the bottom, if you were able to pull that plant out of that pot and inspect the side of the root structure that's still in that soil mass,
mm-hmm.
you will see that it's dry. Okay. You didn't really thoroughly water it.
That's flushed over it.
It just went right through. That's why I think when you add the Garden Magic Topsoil, which is like a darker, like a sedge peat with a little bit of sand in it, not a lot of sand,
uh-huh.
but the two combined in a 50-50 mixture ratio makes for a wonderful container mix. I use it all the time. And I think that topsoil balances out that peat mixture, the Fertilume soil. And they both live well together, play well together. They work harmoniously together, and you will have wonderful, wonderful containers, baskets, window boxes. I'm telling you, take these two soil mixtures, put them together, and you're going to find these only at your local independent garden centers and nurseries. The Fertilume soil is what I'm talking about, and the Garden Magic Topsoil. Once you get everything together, plant it, all you need to do is use Osmocote or fertilize, however you want to fertilize, and just put it on top of the soil after you plant everything.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, every time it rains or you water, it will slowly break down and fertilize your plants. Now, here's something probably a few guys in our industry might say, Tony, bite your tongue. I wish you wouldn't say that. But I'm not a fan of the soils that already come with the fertilizers in it. I just don't like that. I want to control my own fertilization. And for this reason only, I want you to think about this. Let's take the big green bag that everybody's so familiar with. All right. And it already has fertilizer in it. And it says on the outside of that bag, hey, it fertilizes up to 3 months or up to 4 months. That's fine and dandy. But a couple things come into play here. A lot of times, some of the soil bags that we pick up or we get in have a little bit of weight to them, and that's because of moisture.
Mm.
What activates the fertilizer? Moisture. So therefore, it's already started to activate or break down. And then when you water, how do you know when you really need to start fertilizing? Okay, so how long are you going to get out of that fertilization?
Yeah.
That is my reasoning behind my feelings on buying soils that already have the fertilizer in it. I want to control it myself, and do not buy soils with fertilizers in them and plant your plants and then keep fertilizing right on top of it. It's too much nitrogen. I've seen where people have had more nitrogen in their window boxes or in their planters than most of us put on our lawns from a nitrogen standpoint. It's crazy. It's not necessary. More is not better. But, you know, what I like about Fertilum soil is they're saying, why wait for a miracle?
Yeah.
If you get it. So, did I go over your head?
No.
There you go. But that's a great soil mixture. And the other point that I want to make, do not buy the inexpensive 99-cent bags of potting soil or $1.99 worth of potting soil. It's muck. It stays wet. It does. It stays wet. Your plants don't want to grow in that, especially when they're accustomed to growing into those soilless peat mixtures. It's night and day.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the foundation. So don't get caught up in spending a lot of money on plants and thinking you're going to save a couple of dollars down the road to buy inexpensive soil. It's so, so important. And if you follow those measures by getting that soil together the way that it needs to be, you will have wonderful-looking containers and window boxes, bar none. That's the true secret right there. It all comes into play. There's so many soils we were talking about a moment ago that's available to the customers. Just look for Fertilum, the red bag, Fertilum's potting mix, and the Garden Magic topsoil. You can't go wrong. Now, there's some other soils out there that I really like a lot, too. We're going to take another quick break, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about one that has an interesting name, and it might make you happy.
Happy, happy, joy, joy. I love that part. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking soil right now and a couple of key things you need to know about what you put your plants in. That's very important.
Well, another soil that I like a lot that you'll see at your local garden centers and nurseries is from a company called Fox Farm, and it's called Happy Frog. We sell a boatload of this potting soil, and it is excellent, too, for containers as well. It has earthworm castings in it, back guano. You like back guano.
You're
an avid collector of back guano. And it's just a good quality soil. There aren't any cheap fillers in it. There's no sludge in it. It's just a great mixture all the way around. And we have a lot of people now that we sell pallets of it. I mean, people just buy it. They love it. And another one, too, that's good for containers, especially outside, and it has a little bit more bark to it, and it, too, is from Fox Farm, is Ocean Forest. You know, if you're looking for some things that give you better drainage, a little bit more bark to it, but it's great for stuff outside in containers, and it gives you that excellent drainage. But you can't go wrong with some of the Fox Farm soils. We also sell a soil conditioner from Fox Farm that's excellent, and people just, once they use it, They come back for it, Ernie. They really do. When you start using good soils, you won't. It's like drinking a good beer or having a good wine. You don't go back to the cheap stuff. Once you experience using good soils, That is the foundation of your success with your plants. You know, when you buy a $150 shrub or a tree or whatever it may be, and you put it into a $2 hole, you're going to get $2 worth of performance. That is so true. I can't say that enough. And I am not the car salesman. I've said this week a couple of times. I am not there, nor are the rest of the guys here locally that own independent garden centers and nurseries. We're not trying to sell you a
snake oil.
We're not selling you fabric protection or the protector. You know, and we're not going to tell you before you drive off the lot, if you don't buy this product and let us protect your fabric, that avoids the warranty with
sure.
it. You know, that's not our style. We truly want you to be successful, and you're going to get the right information. You're going to find out what's going to be the best product out there for you to be the most successful when you're growing plants.
Like a good foundation for your plants. You got to be
big time, mm-hmm. big time, big time. I can't say it enough. And if you have any questions about soils, give us a call, because it really does get confusing to a lot of customers. Mm-hmm. There's so many soils out there, and everybody's got the best, you know, we got the better mousetrap. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of amendments when it comes to soils that I really think highly of. We've talked about this one in the past. I like Posey Power. And you're going to say to yourself, Posey Power? What's Posey Power? Those that know about Posey Power are very familiar with Posey Power. And what it is, it's sterilized horse manure with a little bit of brewer's grain, a little bit of gypsum. It's a great soil amendment. You know, every year I add it to some of my raised bed boxes and just turn it in. You know, it's got an element of fertilization about it. It's a great, great product. And there are people who will come into the store and say, oh, my buddy's got horses. I can get all the horse manure that I want. Why would I want to spend a couple of dollars on that hokey stuff? You know what I tell you? You know what I tell them?
Right.
If I were you, I'd get it from my friend, too. And I say that facetiously. But, you know, sure. I hear that guy stick his chest out, and he's, you know, he's going to tell me what he can get cheap and free. But a lot of times, you know, a lot of people feed their horses Timothy. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's a tall, wild-growing type of grass that seed passes all the way through that horse's digestive tract, and it will find its way in your garden, and you'll be down to see me to get rid of it.
Sure.
But Posey Power is a great, great soil amendment. And also look for good compost cow manure blends. You know, there are some good products out there that are great to add to your garden. And also sometimes it's not bad to top dress some of your pots and containers with it too.
Sure.
You know.
Tony, we have Jean on the line from Dayton. She wants to know what the formula is for mixing old potting mix with new potting mix. Hi, Jane. Thanks for the call.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have about 20 pots of, you know, that I use out in my yard.
Uh-huh.
Every year I just put, I put new fertilizer or maybe mix some new potting soil in with the old.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the recommendation for that? Change the soil every year or?
Not necessarily. You know, once you start with a good foundation, a good soil mix,
mm-hmm.
the only time I will encourage you to start over as if you had some serious disease issues with what was growing in your pots or your containers the prior season.
Right. And okay. I do that. If they didn't do well, I'll just empty them out in another part of the yard and put some new soil
in. Right. Because a lot of times, I'm going to give you a perfect example, okay? Back in 2012, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was the year that we had the massive influx of downy mildew that just wiped out all of our beautiful, beautiful shade-loving impatiens.
Yeah, yes, I remember that.
And given that type of a disease issue, that becomes soil-borne. And when I say soil-borne, I mean it resides in the soil. Once it's there, it's there. So you can never plant that same type of plant or in that family in that soil again. So that becomes an issue. Mm-hmm. So you might want to remove that soil and then just sanitize your pots on the inside and start new. Now, going back to that downy mildew issue with the impatiens, if you don't change the soil, that doesn't mean you can't plant some other type of species of plant in it.
Okay.
So it's not all done or all bad, so to speak.
But okay. When you're, like, what do you think the ratio would be? Take out a third of the old soil and put in new? Or
no. How I typically do it is obviously when you pull out your old plants, some of the soil is going to adhere to the root structure.
Right.
And I just gently take that, I tap it, and let what falls off back into the pot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take a look at what's left, and then obviously sometimes you got to add a little bit. So I'll get my mixture together in a wheelbarrow.
Yes.
And I, like I said, I like the Fertilume and the Garden Magic topsoil. Mm-hmm. I'll mix it 50-50. Then I put it back into that pot, and then I just turn it in.
Okay.
I turn it in a top maybe 25% layer of that soil that's already existing.
Okay.
And I start there. That's a new, fresh start.
Okay.
Then I plant all my plants. And then go use the Osmocote products, and you'll have beautiful containers.
Okay. Well, I have to pay you another visit.
And I'm still looking for your yellow climber.
Okay.
I'm telling you, roses, yes. So don't, we'll come through. We're good.
Okay. All right. I was wondering about that also.
No, I didn't forget.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Gene.
Thank you. Have a good day, guys.
You do the same. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking quite a bit about containers and making sure you have the proper soil and a good foundation for your plants. But, Tony, we have Suzanne on the line from Claremont County, and she's got a question. Said her weeds seem to be enjoying the Fertilume and appear to be growing a little bit stronger. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing dandy. Thanks. Tell us a little bit about your lawn. What kind of weeds are you having?
I have no idea.
Oh.
I have some weeds that have these little purple flowers on them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, those are wild violets.
Well, it could be a number of things, Ernie. It could be wild violets. You might see some common ground cover starting to go into bloom, Creeping Charlie.
Yeah.
Also, remember we were talking about sometimes you get that purplish look with henbit. Dead nettle, so, and they're starting to fade off a little bit, but it could be a number of things. But go ahead, Suzanne.
Well, I have them in my yard. We're not from here. We're from the south, and some of the stuff I've never seen.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
So I don't know how to kill it and get it not to come back. So we tried the Fertilume, but we haven't had any success with some of the other fertilizers and weed and feed and everything. So I told my husband, I said, look, they swear by this. We're not going to be out anything than what we are anyway. So let's try this. And my yard is looking, the grass is fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
But the weeds are growing us very well, too.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tony. I was going to ask, are you close to any neighbors that have some plants that could be working their way into your lawn? And which, I guess the first question I should say, when did you put it down? And what did you put down? Was it the first step or?
Whatever they told me to get for the fall, we put that down in October.
Okay.
And then we put the second step down in March. Whatever they told me to put down the second time in March.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What you put down in March is more than likely the pre-emergent product, okay?
Okay.
Now, the pre-emergent product, Suzanne, is exactly that. When you hear the term pre-emergent, that means that keeps weed seed from germinating. So what that's going to do is protect your lawn against anything that's blown into your lawn from a seed standpoint, be it crabgrass or whatever, and keeps it from germinating. Now, what we need to do is digress and go back and say, hey, do we have some perennial weeds in our lawn? Which is what you probably have going on. That product, the one that you put down in March, will not do anything for what's already existing. So you need to take a post-effective approach, okay? And you need to use weed-free zone. That is a selective herbicide that will not harm the turf, but it will get rid of those perennial weeds. So what's there is there. How did you just move up from the south when?
There's no. We've been fighting this yard
okay.
for a while.
Okay. I just kind of took it when you said that you just recently moved into town.
No. These are weeds that have been there since we have moved in, and we've tried everything from the big box stores.
What have you tried? What have you sprayed on your lawn? What have you tried?
We tried the Scott's brand had all sorts of stuff. I've never been able to kill anything of it.
Oh, you had...
Whatever it is.
You had to been successful with something.
Can you take some photos of the weeds and maybe put them on our Facebook page?
I could, but not today. I'm getting ready to clock in.
Oh, okay.
What garden center do you typically frequent that's close to you?
I found... is it Ed's Feed and Seed on
okay.
Montgomery Road?
I want you to go back to Ed's.
Okay.
Ed knows what he's doing. Ed's very reputable in the area up there where you live. And tell him you want weed-free zone, and that's what you need to do. You're putting down fertilizers and a weed preventer with the first step of Fertilin when you did it in March. But we need to come back with something that's selective and get rid of that. And I guarantee you, you're going to be successful with it, or Ed will give you your money back. Fertilin will give you your money back. That's that good of a product. You need to go up there and get mapped out with that. And then I want you to call us back, Suzanne, and follow up with us.
Okay.
Now, Suzanne, I know you're about to clock in, but I did want to share with you that, I just applied this weed-free zone in the front part of my house, and it took care of the dandelions, the wild violets, and the creeping Charlie that I, too, had been battling for a while. So make sure you get out there and visit with Ed, and we'll get this lined out for you.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank
you. And honestly, take some photos of those little annoying things and post them onto our Facebook page so we can help you out.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Right. Hang in there, Suzanne. You're going to knock them out. I'm telling you.
All right. Thanks. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the soil.
Well, when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about some selective herbicides and put some clarification on it because it gets a little confusing. And, in particular, we're going to hone in on weed-free zone and what's in it and why it's a little bit better than some of the other products that are on the shelf.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we want to go back to the conversation we were having with Suzanne from Claremont County about a couple of things, weed-free zone, what's in it, and help her get a couple of other things done.
Right. There's various types of herbicides out there on the market. And when we talk about herbicides, there's two formats here. It's either a selective herbicide or it's a non-selective herbicide. And when we say that, we mean this. When we say it's a selective herbicide, it means that herbicide, that weed killer that you spray and apply on your lawn, can distinguish between the lawn itself, the turf, and broadleaf weeds. So that's a selective approach. A non-selective approach is whatever it is that you spray, doesn't care what it gets on, it's either going to injure it or kill it. And that's typically, your Roundup, your Kills-All, anything with glyphosate in it for the most part. So those are the two types of herbicides that we talk about mostly. It's either selective or non-selective. Now, as we talk about the selective herbicides for the lawn, there's various types of selective herbicides out there. There are some that are very weak. It's almost like drinking a weak tea or a weak coffee.
Right.
And when we say that, The key ingredient in most of your herbicides is a compound element called 2,4-D. And 2,4-D can vary by percentage in a concentrated amount or if it's in a spray bottle, a ready-to-use.
Mm-hmm.
So 2,4-D is the common component in a lot of weed killers. In addition to that, and this is not a biology class or any type of component class, and I'm just trying to nail some things down for some people because it gets really confusing. In addition to 2,4-D, you take weed-free zone from Fertilin, for example, you also have dicamba. You have carfentrazone, megaprop. So you have these other components that come into play that are very effective for getting rid of some of the tougher to kill broadleaf weeds. And some of those that are tough to get rid of is common ground cover.
Right.
Creeping Charlie.
Yeah.
We've talked about that several times in the past. Also, clover can sometimes be very difficult to eradicate. Wild violets can. Wild onions. Wild strawberries.
Wild West.
These are the items that if you just buy a regular Weed Be Gone, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not going to touch it. It's going to laugh at it. It might burn it a little bit. It might injure it a little bit. But I'm telling you, there's not enough in it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, too, this is so important. It's all about everybody being happy in the lawn when you're spraying these guys. Your herbicides are more effective if we've had a rain a couple of days before you apply,
mm-hmm.
because everybody's happy, everybody's partying in the lawn, or they're joyous, it's their day, they're happy, okay? Also, do not mow your lawn 2 days before you apply these products, nor 2 days after. The more leaf surface that you have regarding whatever it is that you're spraying, you will be more effective. A lot of guys think, hey, I'm going to scalp this, and I'm going to spray more than the 2.5 fluid ounces that it costs per gallon of water. I'm going to add 5 because that's got to be better.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. You're wasting your money. Think about it. Most of these companies, they spend a lot of money on R&D, research and development. If they thought that you needed more product instead of 2.5 ounces that you will use in weed-free zone, if they thought it needed to be 5, don't you think they would put 5 on there so you'd come back and buy more sooner?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't make sense. Use what it costs for. And I get this all the time. And I understand we think more is better, but it's truly not. But pay attention to the labels. This is why it's so important to go to a local garden center or a nursery. We know these things.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can bring samples in, that's whatever's in your landscape beds or whatever's in your lawn, bring those in to us. We're there to help you identify those weeds, what they are. And we can tell you quite a bit about those weeds if you really want to get down to it. If we can't identify it, we're going to tell you, I'm not really sure what that is. But we can find out. We can take it to the extension office. I just called Joe Smith up the other day at the Boone County Extension. I had a question the other day about red thread in the lawn.
That's one I've never heard of.
It's a fungal disease. I've not seen it yet,
mm-hmm.
but someone had taken a photograph of it, and I asked Joe, are you seeing any of this yet? You know, what's going on? Because we've been heating up. We've had a little bit of moisture. We've had a little bit of humidity. It's getting warm. It's getting warm quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We're pushing 80. It's not typical. And then look at the day. So all these things, these temperature fluctuations, the moisture levels, it all comes into play, and it has either a positive effect on plants,
mm-hmm.
or it has a negative effect on plants. But, you know, I call Joe often, and I'll send samples out to Joe. That's why I highly prize and value our extension services in Northern Kentucky. They all do a great job. Sarah over in Campbell County. You have Michelle out in Kenton County, Dave Kester and Joe Smith and the gang out in Boone County. We're very fortunate. And these are services that are provided to us who are taxpayers in Northern Kentucky that I encourage everybody to use.
Mm-hmm.
It's there at our, you know, fingertips, and it's valuable, valuable information. So get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. If you're having weed issues, we're going to point you in the right direction. It's not elimination by process. Or process by elimination. You know, we're not going to say, well, try this, and if it doesn't work, come back, we're going to give you something else. And if that doesn't work, come back, and we're going to give you something else.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. And I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but it really gets confusing to a lot of the customers.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And one of the things that we wanted to also finish our conversation about was about the plants and the soil in the pots that you're getting ready to put up. And we left that conversation a few minutes ago about the importance of having a good, strong base. And you wanted to point out a couple of other things about different kinds of soil.
Yeah, we were talking about the soils and, you know, that being the key foundation to your success growing things in containers and window boxes or porch pots, whatever it is that you're using. The other element that really comes into play, too, is making sure that that container has drain holes in it, one, and two, that you prep that in such a way that before you add all your soil to it, that you allow for good drainage.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say this, I mean you can use gravel in the bottom of some of these pots.
Yep.
I've seen people use some of the styrofoam packing peanuts mm-hmm. in the bottom of some of these pots. I've also used cocoa fiber, you know, like the cocoa liners right. in the bottom of pots. Some people who use really, really large pots and they want to lighten the weight. People have taken like water bottles, mm-hmm. empty water bottles that you buy, like from Ice Mountain or wherever. And once they're empty, they put the cap back on and will put in the bottom of their containers and then fill it with soil.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
So that keeps a void at the base. It allows for water to permeate and get through and get out those weep holes. It lightens the weight of the container.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of things that you can do, and hopefully somebody might call in and say, hey, I take this approach.
Right. You know, I've used to remember, I seem to recall when the old clay pots that would once in a while get broken, they would never get discarded.
Right.
They would get, broken up into other smaller pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom would put those in the bottom of her pots.
And thank you for bringing that up, because that's one of my favorites, too, and I forgot all about it. The concave part of that clay pot, when you lay it down in the bottom of the whatever pot that it is that you're getting ready to fill with soil,
mm-hmm.
it creates that void.
Right.
And it never fills. So it's a good idea there. Your mom was on game. She was ahead of her time.
Yes, she was. But that is important for several reasons. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier is you don't want the plants just sitting in or soaking in water.
It's the worst thing. Think about this. And here's a good rule of thumb to follow. If you ever see, be it a house plant, a perennial, a shrub, an annual, if it's in a wilted stage, you water it, and you come back like an hour later and it's perked up, that is a telltale sign that that plant was dry.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's still in a wilted stage, do not continue watering it. Because what's happening is, down below the soil surface, it's saturated with water, there's no oxygen, and those roots are not breathing, and they're drowning. And you're going to compound that issue and make it worse, and all of a sudden, you're going to be out a plant.
Let me ask you about a phrase we will often hear, that plant is root-bound. And, so how often should you check to see if your plant needs to go to a bigger pot?
Probably every year you need to assess that once a year. And, when we talk about plants that are perhaps root-bound, it comes into play in various ways. Let's take, we're going to talk about a house plant that might be root-bound in relation to a shrub in a nursery that might be root-bound.
Mm-hmm.
A shrub in a nursery that's root-bound typically is a plant that needs to get put into the ground rather quickly. The longer that plant stays in that pot and it's root-bound, it's more difficult for it to take in nutrients.
Sure.
It's more difficult for it to stay adequately watered, moist when it needs to. And it's losing. It's a losing battle for that shrub. And the sooner you can get it into the ground, the better. And if you happen to pick up a root-bound plant in the nursery, when you take it out of the pot, it is so important that you tease the roots.
I was just about to ask you about that.
Tell it a joke, or you tease it, you call it a name. Take your hands and you physically try to loosen up those outer roots and pull them apart a little bit.
Okay.
If you can't physically do that,
right.
We're going to talk more about, we're going to take a break. Are we good? Okay. If you cannot physically do that, take a utility knife or a pocket knife and cut it. It's so important. If you don't and you put it into the ground, it's more than likely going to stay in a root-bounded stage, and it will just girdle itself. It just won't move. It won't do anything. And that is so important that you tease those roots. And then we're talking about nursery stock plants. And sometimes those of us who have garden centers and nurseries, this can happen. When we get plants in from Willow Way or other nurseries up north or wherever, they may come in root-bound.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to get that out of their nurseries.
Right.
So, and I get aggravated with that.
And what about dipping them into a bucket of water before you put them into the ground? Any benefit to that?
I don't typically do that. Okay. Not with nursery stock. You know, I loosen the roots and I'll mix my soil to the point where I have a nice loamy mixture, and I'm using the existing soil, and I'm digging my hole 2 to 3 times the width of the pot,
mm-hmm.
not deep, mm-hmm. wide,
mm-hmm.
because you get most of your root development horizontally, not vertically.
Okay.
Now, there's some plants that will go down with a taproot, but, you know, getting that good mixture is so important. And what I like to do, I'm going to use one of two products. When you talk about dipping things, I'm not really dipping, but I'm going to immediately follow up with, I'm going to water it in really well with a root stimulator.
Mm-hmm.
Fertilume makes a great root stimulator, and it's genetically modified with hormones that promotes root development. Or I'm going to use Aspoma's Biotone. Okay, one of the two. I'm not going to use a green box, if you know what I'm saying. And I'm just going to let it go from that point. Now, let's go back to a house plant. You know, we're talking about things being root bound.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a rubber tree plant, for example. In my opinion, you know, there are more house plants that like to be in a root bound stage and do better in a root bound stage than they do in some big pot getting all swallowed up by a mass of soil.
Right.
And they'll tell you what's going on. So every couple of years, I'll assess an indoor plant. You know, like I said, it could be an arbicola, a Scheffalera, or it could be a rubber tree plant. It could be a ficus. It could be whatever. I like to keep those a little bit on a root-bound side. Now, let's just say, for example, if it's in a 10-inch pot or if it's in a 12-inch pot, when you bump it up, you bump it up gradually. You take it to the next size pot up. You don't take a 6-inch plant, house plant, and put it into a 12-inch pot. Okay? That plant is only accustomed to staying moist for a period of time in that little 6-inch pot,
mm-hmm.
versus all that amount of soil that you add to a larger 12-inch pot. When you water that, that soil volume stays wet longer, and that plant's not used to that.
Okay.
Gradually take it up. And I love pots that allow water to wick away, especially with clay.
Mm-hmm.
I find it better that plants do better in clay and things of that nature than they do in plastic pots. Not that they won't do well in plastic pots, but think about it. Plastic does not allow moisture to wick out the side.
Mm-hmm.
It's lighter in weight, though. That's a huge benefit with plastic, but you have to be a little more careful about your watering techniques.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about the beautiful burst of color that's available to you at your locally owned, independently operated garden center right now. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And before we get to talking about the color, Tony, a couple of minutes ago, we had one of our listeners, Kim Whaley, posted a question on our Facebook page. And her question was, do you have any ideas for an alternative for the cocoa liners for wired flowered boxes? Because I have to replace mine every 2 or 3 seasons. The sun deteriorates them, and the birds use them for nesting material.
I've heard of that, too.
Love
yeah.
the show.
Oh, thank you, Kim. The other alternative to the cocoa liner would be using sheet moss, green sheet moss, which is very attractive, and it gives you a natural look. And it really it creates an interesting look with your baskets versus seeing that brown cocoa liner.
Uh-huh.
So that's the other option that comes to mind first. And the cocoa liner thing has been around for a number of years. And I'm going to be honest with you. Sometimes I get tired of looking at it. And I shouldn't say that. We sell so many various types of cocoa liners. But that's what's been used most often in the past several years, 5 to 10 years. Most people are still using those type of baskets, or they're using those type of trowels that they're putting as window boxes or on their decks. I like a lot of the window boxes that you see out there from a company called Novelty.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's Flower Framers, which I believe is a local company here in the Cincinnati area. That's not a cheap window box, but it's a very well-made window box. Also, Main is another company that makes a really nice window box. When you go a little bit bigger with your window boxes, your plants perform totally different, better so than what you typically get in some of the cocoa liner boxes. Mm-hmm. The coconut liner has a little bit of a tendency to dry out. And what I encourage some homeowners to do, if you're familiar with some of the little pie tins, I like to place those in the bottom of the coconut liners where they hold just a little bit of moisture. And I found that to be a big, huge plus, you know, keeping those from drying out. But other than using just green sheet moss to line those versus the coconut liner, I really don't have any other ideas. Maybe someone else does. That's a very interesting approach to try and switch that up. But you're very limited, to say the least.
Yeah, there's only a couple of options here for you, but she just responded back to the question asking that, you know, she still is struggling with this thought about putting something in there that's good for the plants and that the birds won't. So I told her, I responded back to her and said, you've got an answer and we're talking about it right now. The Facebook page is a great way to stay connected with us, and you can pose questions and we'll get those answered for you as quickly as possible. So make sure you look us up and like us on Facebook and check out some of the beautiful pictures that Tony has posted. Get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. They're all fully stocked, and this is the time. We talk about this quite a bit, is if you wait much longer, the selection dwindles pretty quickly.
We're still good, though.
Oh, yeah.
There's still a lot of stuff that's not really ready.
Right. So it's great to get there early and get the plants that you want right now and get them into the ground. Because another thing that's coming up quickly, Tony, Mother's Day is quickly approaching.
It'll be here quicker than you realize.
It will. And
you're right. That's just a few weeks out.
And a great time now to start thinking about Mother's Day gifts. If you're fortunate enough to still have your mother with you, make sure you spend some time with her, but get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. Moms always love plants and flowers, but
I know what you're going to say. you're Johnny on here. You're spot on. Yeah. Go ahead. I'd love that. Yeah. You're right.
If you're thoughtful enough to buy mom some plants, stick around and put them in the ground for her on Mother's Day. Mother's Day's the earmark for when it's okay or safe to put plants in the ground, plant them outside because of the last freeze date, right? I'm not sure what date that is.
That is our last average frost date is May 15th.
Frost date.
And if you remember last year, I think it was on the 15th that we had a frost, or the 16th. Oh, yeah. It was the day after Mother's Day. So, you know, that's so important.
That's why that's the rule of thumb.
And here is something else that's coming into play, especially with today's weather and dampness. I know people have been buying tomato plants, but I'm going to tell you, when you put them in the ground, the soil temperature in the ground is totally different than what that soil temperature was for that tomato plant when it came out of the greenhouse. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, that's like doing that Polar Express, jump in ice cold water, and you come out and you're shivering and you're freezing. Those plants don't take a liking to that kind of environment. And what you're doing is you're making that plant think differently, and it doesn't know what to do. Uh-huh. You know, I can't speak for it because it's not really talking to me. But plants will tell you, and you'll see this with tomato plants, if that ground is a little too cool or the temperatures outside are a little too cool, they'll take on a little bit of a purplish hue. And that foliage just doesn't look right.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a telltale sign that something's not right. And more than likely, it's you putting it into the ground too soon. Buy a tomato. If you want that tomato, the first one, buy one and play a joke on your buddies. I don't know what else to tell you. Or buy Early Girl, something that's an early producer. Or keep them in containers. And if you get into some cold temperatures or some of these situations where we might dip down, bring that plant in only for the night.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a week staying inside. It's just the night. And then take it back out. I hear people often say this. Well, you won't have this particular color in a couple of weeks. And that's why I want to take it home and I'm going to put it in the garage until I can put it outside. I'm like, no. I don't want you to do that. I really don't.
No.
It's not the ideal situation to put yourself into to play that shell game, you know, taking things in and out. I think, I don't know, when you gave us a little bit of that owl sleet AccuGuess forecast, mm-hmm. I don't know what next week's temperatures bring our way. But I will say this. The best thing that you can do when you're trying to guess what Mother Nature might be throwing our way and time it perfectly with what you're doing and buying and purchasing,
mm-hmm.
when we get towards the tail end of the month of April, where we're fast approaching, look at that 10-day forecast. That kind of gives you an idea what it's going to be like. You know, I can say this, that I think that 10-day forecast is usually, it gives you a pretty good rough idea mm-hmm. what you might expect. And just go with it from there. Sometimes you get the bear, or sometimes the bear gets you. It's, you know, if you're putting tomato plants out there and it costs you $1.99 a plant or whatever, or six plants for $2.99, it's certainly not going to break the bank. That's what I tell people. And I like those guys because I typically see them come back in.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's one of those first signs of spring and that winter has passed. The burst of color. It kind of starts with the little crocuses and the daffodils and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of the great plants start arriving at your locally owned, independently operated garden center.
Oh, this is when we get excited. And this is, we got to make hay when we can make hay. And all this stuff that's coming in and a lot of the guys that grow locally, it's that time of year where it seems like one big long day. You know, Todd down at Baton's the other day sent a message out like, you know, Tony, we're getting older and I don't know if we can keep up with this pace. And I'm like, yeah, I can identify with that. And he went on to say, like, his dad's been around and in the business for a number of years. My dad as well. My dad was unloading trucks yesterday, nursery stock. And, mm-hmm. you know, I told Todd, I said, you know, we had great teachers. You know, our fathers, they came from the school of hard knocks and they worked hard.
Right.
And you couldn't learn from anybody better. And it just seems like one long day. And that's what it is, you know. Yeah. And before you know it, it's our 6 weeks to shine, and it's going to be summertime.
Yes. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have George from Western Hills on the line who's got some weeds in his lawn. Hi, George.
Hi, how you doing?
Wonderful, thanks. What kind of weeds do you have?
I'm not 100%, but I've been told it's in my turf. I've got either tall stock bluegrass or quack grass.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering how to get rid of it if possible without just killing it.
Well, really nothing selective. And the annual bluegrass, light in color, like clumpy.
Yeah, I've got a nice dark turf, and then I got these blotches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like every year it keeps spreading.
You know, really, that the annual bluegrass, annual poa, it will germinate in the fall season. So, you know, getting down another pre-emergent application would be very beneficial for you later in the year. Actually, annual bluegrass will die out in your lawn as we get into the summer months.
Right. It goes away as it gets mm-hmm. hot. But right now it looks terrible.
Well, you know what I would probably do? Well, and your hands are kind of tied behind your back, because when I talk about you know, using a pre-emergent later in the season to keep that annual bluegrass from germinating in the lawn late in the year, that's the time you're trying to get grass seed to grow in those vacant spots. So that I kind of puts your hands behind your back and limits you to a degree. You can kill it with glyphosate, Roundup, or Kills-All, and then sow grass seed in those spots.
But I've been told it'll come back. Now, I mean, it might come back. They said, I talked to a guy that treats lawns, and he's like, I've got one. We killed it three times, seeded, and it comes back. Now, I did hit it with some Tenacity a couple days ago. I don't know if that's going to do anything to it. But
Tenacity, to my understanding, and that's interesting that you brought that you bring this up, and that is a little salty, too, when I say that, in price. But it a little bit goes a long way.
Right.
That works really well with Nimblewill. In the summer months, when you start seeing, you know, Nimblewill is a warm season perennial grass that we'll see get into our lawns.
Like the nutgrass?
Not nutgrass. That's like the nuts edge.
Yeah.
What else was labeled on that Tenacity?
Gosh, I can't remember. I mean,
were there several? Yeah.
It's a little tiny bottle for about $100.
Yeah, it's not cheap. No, buy a lot of beer over at the football stadium with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, keep me in a loop. If you use Tenacity on the annual bluegrass, I'm very interested to see what that does.
They said it might turn it white, but
yeah,
it
usually
won't kill it.
That's what you see. It turns it white. It weakens it.
Okay. You're saying put a pre-emergent down in the fall as well. I mean, I probably should go buy it because I might not find it in the fall.
Well, you know, in the fall, use a Dimension in your lawn. That's high yields, turf and ornamental, weed and grass stopper. I love Dimension.
Right.
And actually, this is really an interesting conversation here because a couple of things come into play. When we talk about the Fertilin three-step program and using the first step in March, and that's all seasons two that has prodiamine in it, and prodiamine is your pre-emergent product that will give you a good solid 5 to 6 months of protection. And when you think about that, if you look at that on a scale or a graph from a chronological standpoint in time, let's just say you put it down April 1st, as an example. You got May, June, July, August. September's 5 months. Going into October is six. And it slowly decreases in its effectiveness as a pre-emergent. And that's when a lot of things sneak in under the radar into our lawns and it germinates and we don't see it because it's relatively small. We mow our turf at a higher level later in the summer going into fall. And those perennial weeds, they're there. We just don't see them. And then they just break loose in the spring. And even the annual bluegrass is germinating at that point in time. So as we get down towards the end of summer, I want you to think about this. That barrier with the first step, its effectiveness decreases ever so slightly as we progress through time. So therefore, if we come back at the end of summer and put down Dimension in our lawns, we get an added value, a bonus to that for winter stuff, like winter annual weeds that germinate in our lawns at that time of year. And it also, what else comes into play is how much moisture, how much rainfall we get throughout the season. Perhaps you as a homeowner, if you have an irrigation system and you water often, so that lessens the effectiveness. So there's so many things that come into play, but understanding what's happening is really important. So going back to that annual bluegrass, go after it with a pre-emergent, or kill it now with a non-selective herbicide. And even you're having quack grass right now, too? It's kind of... I
don't know. I mean, they said... I took some pictures and sent them to somebody, and they said it's either, you know, tall stock bluegrass or rough stock bluegrass or quack grass. He wasn't sure.
Well, there's also kind of like a rogue, like thick-bladed wild fescue as well. Sometimes I'll see in lawns. The best thing that you can do, you've probably honed in on one from an identification standpoint, and that's the annual bluegrass. The other one, you know, would be interesting to take it into an extension office and have them take a look at it. And when we talk about what it is we're trying to identify when it comes to weeds and turf and so forth, it gets really complicated. I mean, there's things that we can spot and say, yeah, that's what that is. I know for sure. And sometimes there's things that resemble one another. And looking at the auricles, the ligules, and all that stuff gets really scientific. And a trained eye needs to look at that under a microscope. And that's why using our extension services is really so important. And we can truly identify what it is that's in our lawn and then properly treat it.
Where is one of those offices at around here?
I don't know and I want somebody that's listening that knows about the extension services here in the Cincinnati area to call in and give us some more information. I'm more familiar with what's over in Northern Kentucky. I know that Claremont County has an extension. I don't know about Hamilton County. Look in your phone book or online. When we take a break, I'll see what I can find out.
Yeah, I was going to suggest.
And provide that.
George, why don't you hang on the line? We'll get your contact information. We'll find that extension office for you in Hamilton County and get you the information.
All right, great. I appreciate it.
Okay, stand by for a moment. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Get it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're always referring you to your locally owned, independently operated home and garden center and lawn care. Not lawn care. Garden center.
Garden centers and nurseries is what Ernie's trying to get out there to you.
And the reason I was trying to point that out is about the importance of customer service. And I, you know, when we went into break, not only did you spend the 4 or 5 minutes we were in a commercial break on the phone with George from Western Hills helping him resolve that issue, you offered to help him afterwards. And that's the kind of thing you get at your local garden center.
So true. And, you know, we really go above and beyond to help everybody that we possibly can.
If I had a hat on, I'd take it off to you.
Well, thank you, Ernie. And, you know, and it's for this reason, it's not, I mean, it is a job and it's a business for us, but also we're very passionate about what we do and we like plants. We're plant geeks, you know, I am anyway, you know, but I enjoy it. And I want to point this out, if this is correct, and it's not an old site by any means, this is the Hamilton County Extension number. Is 513-946-8989, and it's located at 4210 Dane, D as in dog, Dane Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio. And if someone knows other than I that this is different, please let us know. That's what I have to offer up.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I need to verse myself a little bit better and have a list here for local offices. And if you really think about it, too, a lot of the ag departments that that do best or extension offices are those in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's I don't think there's a lot of farms in Cincinnati. You know,
Not anymore.
You know. I think for that reason, things kind of do change somewhat.
Yeah.
And maybe some offices will kind of combine or come together as one entity or another. You know, where you just scale down somewhat
sure.
because of the demographics. But
I think that's what's happened is that, you know, through the course of time, a lot of people got away from little gardens or home gardens, and those extension services probably weren't being used weren't proficient. So now that a lot of people are beginning to go back to the farm or garden to table frame of mind, it's important to bring those services back or at least revive them in some sort.
You're seeing it more and more. Mm-hmm. And I know like out of Boone County, they just built that new enrichment center. And it's not only for agriculture. There's a lot of things. You know, you talk about 4-H. There's so many other services that they provide and offer in classes. I wish I had time to take more of that in. I really do because I like to learn. And I will be the first one to tell you, I do not know everything about the horticultural world. I learn every day, and I learn from customers. I learn from my peers, things that I read, things that I experience. And that's the beauty of this industry is that it's never boring, and it always keeps you on your toes, and you're always trying to find out why something is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's really unique. You know, the other day, actually I had two people that stopped into the garden center, and they're like, I have red thread. And I pause for a moment, and I'm thinking, I know it can happen in the spring, and you know, again, that's brought on by environmental conditions. I pause for a moment because, you know, I'm thinking, man, it's a little early, but we're in the spring, just mm-hmm. a smidge early. But maybe not. You know, everything's about growing degree days. It's about temperatures, and it's about those averages. And that's when things start to happen. So I had mentioned Joe out at the Boone County Extension, Joe Smith, great guy, has always been so helpful in my search for some answers for various issues in the past. And thanks, as always, Joe. But I sent a customer out there to, you know, hey, go to whatever county that you're in. You know, they were in Boone or Kenton or wherever. and find out. Let's find out what it is before you buy a product to treat it. And if you think you have some of these fungal diseases in your lawn, F-Stop, and it too is a fertilizer product, is a great proactive approach for, you know, fungal issues in the lawn. And also it has a curative element about it that it gets rid of things. And even the one customer that was in the other day, Stephanie, she said, yeah, after she had purchased it last year, things went away. So I know that that curative element is very, very effective. And I don't want you just always using these fungicides all the time just to merely use them. I want to find out what's going on and is it in fact what it is. And let's find out what the underlying reason is for why it's occurring. You know, a lot of times when you have red thread, it's usually lawns too that have expired or used a lot of its nitrogen reserves up a little earlier, prematurely. And a lot of times nitrogen will get it to bounce back. So that's another approach that you can take if you're experiencing red thread. And red thread, really, it does not affect any of the root system. It's just something you see at the very top of the turf itself, and it will eventually go away. So that's the other key element to it. But always know what you have going on before you get deep into something.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you a perfect example. Last year, a customer was having an issue with an oak tree, and she had five different arborists look at it and had five different analysis or prognosis what's going on with it. And some of those involved some, you know, sizable amounts of money,
right,
to take care of it. And in fact, it was something totally different that didn't need any attention. And that's why extension offices are so important to us. Don't leap or jump into something with both feet. You know, find out exactly what it is and then go with it from there.
Certainly. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back, Tony, we all have Sandy on the line from Ripley who needs help with fixing. I can't read your writing there, John. We'll have Sandy on the line from Ripley. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We lost our connection with Sandy and Ripley, but I did find out what John's writing meant. So call us back, Sandy. She needs help, Tony, with addressing or fixing a damaged tree in her lawn.
Interesting. Yeah, a number of things that come into play there. And I'm glad that, did you just take a quick shorthand class?
I did.
Able to read that?
I did. Yeah. Scribble 101.
Yeah, I had that class.
Yeah, I guess. We have Sandy back. Hi, Sandy. Thanks for calling us back.
Hey, sorry about that. No. I'm trying to drive, and when you live out in the country, that's a bad thing. Is that cell phone reception?
It is. What kind of tree do you have?
It's actually, I have two apple trees and a pear tree. And what happened was my darn goats got loose, and I did three.
Yeah, you are out in the country. You're struggling with your signal there. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead. What we heard was you had two goats and a tree.
Yeah, it's two apple trees and a pear tree, and my goats ate the bark off the bottom of them.
Oh boy.
All the way around?
All the way around, but they are still living because they did this in the winter,
uh-huh,
and they're blooming out nicely. But every time I Google tree dressing, which is what I used to call it like back in the day,
mm-hmm,
it comes up with some really weird results.
Are you thinking about that white wash stuff that they use? You know, am I not dead?
Well, that's a little different. I have a great deal of concern here. The one thing is that's positive from what you're telling me is that the trees leafed out, they fleshed out, they're blooming, or they did bloom. That is a good sign. Now, there's a point in time if the damage goes into it deep enough, you really disrupt the phloem, the outer part of that tree, where all of its energy goes up. Okay?
Right.
And once that's disrupted, it usually brings about the demise of that tree or the species that's damaged.
Okay.
Now, a lot of times in the past, our fathers, our grandfathers would always use a type of black product like a tar to put on wounds of trees to heal them or cover them or seal them and keep moisture out and insects out. That's not the common thread today. That's not the way we think about treating trees or injuries. We want them to heal on their own, almost like if you had a scrape or a cut on your arm, instead of covering it with a Band-Aid or a bandage, just allow the air to get to it and allow it to heal on its own. And you'll have to monitor that and just see what happens. And over time, if things are all well, the tree will heal itself and be okay. I would encourage you to put some sort of a, if it's chicken wire or some sort of hardware cloth around that tree, using a couple of wooden stakes to keep them away from it.
Which we already have, and in fact, I got rid of all but two of my goats because they were just being too ornery, and they were just killing off too many things, like blueberries, strawberries.
Oh, wow.
Eating, they were, and it wasn't, it, they were being counterproductive of what I wanted.
Yeah. Are they your weed protection, weed control?
No, actually, for a while there, I was making homemade goat's milk soap and lotion.
Oh, wow, interesting.
Yeah, and I'm kind of just out, I'm done with that, I'm bored with that, so time to get rid of the goats.
On to something else.
Yes, exactly. And but the reason I was calling is because the black tar thing is what I'm used to seeing. But a friend of mine was recently telling me, because I raise bees, to take some of the bee, extra beeswax and rub that on the bark.
Never heard of that.
I didn't know if that would, because of it being all natural and being, you know, so I didn't know if that would actually help or not.
You know, I really don't know. That's an interesting approach. But for the most part, I think I would just allow it to heal on its own.
Okay.
And just, you know, monitor the tree, keep an eye on the tree. And if need be, you know, if things kind of go on a decline, maybe bring in a certified arborist and just see what they have to say. And
yeah,
other than
that. We only planted these trees 3 years ago, so like an arborist would be kind of like, at that point, I would just kind of just remove the tree and plant a new one.
I got you. Yeah, it would be over. Okay, perfect. Yeah, you could do that as well.
Right, but I know they killed one pear tree. There was one pear tree that just didn't come back, and it has no life in it whatsoever. They also killed a lilac that I absolutely loved and a hydrangea.
I'd be like, you're out of here, just like you've already done. You're out of here.
I got rid of them really quickly, and I kept the two I kept are super sweet, and they don't get loose. Like, goats are escape artists. Like, you can pin them up, and, I mean, to the point where they have little burn marks on their skin where I put an extra line of electric fence around certain things just to keep deer away, and they would walk right through the electric fence. And I'm like, and I tell people, I'm like, they're escape artists. They will find a way to get out and munch on whatever they want to munch on.
Appetite will drive you to places you've never been.
And you have 16, I have 16 other acres of completely wooded areas where it has wild roses and wild blackberries and stuff like that that they love to munch on. And they're like, nope, we're going to be welfare goats and we're going to go to where it's easy and already clear it out.
Well, the road of least resistance right there, the shortest distance.
Well, do us a couple of favors. We want to follow along. So snap a couple of photos and send them to our Facebook page so we can check the progress.
Okay, great.
All right, and thank you for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back,
we're going to talk about the plant of the week.
We'll be
it
right
involves
back.
More than one.
Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, in and around the house, is ready with your plant of the week.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Each week we try to feature a new plant that could be perfect for your landscape. And Tony's got some great ones today.
I do. And last week it was the dogwood because of the beautiful blooms that we're now seeing with the dogwoods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to kind of tone it down a little bit. Sometimes, you know, for me,
simmer down.
I'm going to simmer down. Take it easy, boy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really about a lot of plants that show some interesting texture and color, and not always necessarily is it bloom for me. I like blooms, don't get me wrong, but I think this perennial has a lot of value to bring into the landscape, especially if you have some shade or even some dappled sun or dappled shade, however you want to term it as being.
Daffodils?
No, I didn't say
just
that.
Just a joke.
Will you quit joking like that? However, I think that this particular perennial adds a lot of value to the shade garden. I really do. And I'm talking about hardy ferns. I love hardy ferns. And they have such a distinctive look, a lot of color, a lot of texture going on, various heights. And I think that ferns, if you're sitting back in your yard and it's shady and it's quiet, it's a hot afternoon day that you mowed the front yard and it was sunny out there. Now it's time to relax with a beer or maybe even a...
Several.
Well, or a Manhattan. I like Manhattans. Or if it's just iced tea. You know, it brings a tranquil feeling into a shade garden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ferns just have that knacky ability to do so, and it just makes it peaceful. I don't know. And you see ferns a lot. You know, they're always hanging out on the, you know, woodland floors, like low, you know, underneath these large trees, the canopies. But ferns provide a lot of attractive textures and colors. And you can't go wrong with them if you have shady situations. You know, a lot of the ferns that we sell, the perennial ferns, they like, you know, they don't want to sit in water, but they'll tolerate some moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And they like a little acidic soil. And they look awesome in mass plantings. And when I say that, like a grouping, you know, where it's just all one planting, they have a really cool effect. Now, if you don't want to do a mass planting, you know, you can take those ferns, and we're going to talk about some specific types of ferns here in a moment, but they also play well with other shade-loving plants in the landscape. Can you name it? Will you name a shade-loving plant for me, Ernie? This is a quiz.
Yep.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Get your face. I love it.
I didn't know there was going to be a test today.
A little pop quiz.
A little pop quiz.
Yeah. Well, you know, ferns play well with hostas. In a shade garden?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Who doesn't like hostas? You know, and hostas, too, another type of plant that's about foliage.
Mm-hmm.
So take the texture of the fronds of a fern and the textures of the fern and combine it with some of the colors and the textures of hostas. It's an interesting effect.
Did you just say fronds?
Fronds.
Don't fiddle you up.
Yeah, you're eating fiddleheads. You can take the fiddleheads and kind of... saute them in butter, put them on a salad. That's a little unfurling of the fronds as they're really tight and they look, you know, they're just curled up. Fiddlehead. Say that, Ernie. Spell that and use that in a sentence, will you please?
No spelling.
You know, another plant.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
Fiddlehead. I don't know how to spell fiddlehead.
Can you tell me its origin? Yeah. What country its origin? Is it a noun?
I'm always the first one out of a spelling bee.
I don't know. You do ask me a lot about spelling.
I do.
You know, you'll ruin your credibility really quick with spelling, so I like that. You always check on it.
It's nice to start out with zero credibility.
Because it can only get better.
And nobody guesses after that.
You know, other plants that you can plant ferns with in a shade garden, astilbe. I love astilbe. Great texture. Another plant. Gives you a really interesting bloom. Brunnera or Brunera, however you want to pronounce that. Jack Frost, looking glass. This is a perennial that's a shade-loving perennial that gives you a real little dainty like grouping of blue blooms that are very interesting. But with the Brunera, however you want to term it as being, I always call it Brunera. I love the texture of the foliage with that. And it has that silvery, grayish hue to the texture as a perennial plant. And here again, for me, it's not always the bloom. It's these colors of the foliage I think that I find most attracting. Solomon seal. I love Polygonatum, another great shade plant. So these are just a couple of shade plants that, you can pair up with your ferns. Perennial ferns are awesome, and look for those at your local garden centers and nurseries. And they just add such great value to a shade garden, and they're easy to take care of. Now, come winter months, I like to leave my ferns intact. I don't cut them back. I think that that kind of helps with the overwintering process. Sometimes, like I say, when we talk about overwintering mums or sometimes even some ornamental grasses, I like to leave them intact. It creates a little bit of winter interest in the garden. If it's still there, it's not a big deal. You just clean that stuff up come springtime. Once you start seeing the new fronds foil and start pushing new growth in the spring, you clean up the old stuff. So just if you have that ideal spot, that shady spot down in the garden, try a couple of different ferns. I mean, you're not going to go wrong at all. Do you have any ferns by chance, Ernie?
Yeah, I think we do.
Do you? Do you know what varieties without you having to phone a friend?
No.
Or ask the audience?
I'm out.
You're out? For that reason, you're out?
I know they came from you, so that narrows it down.
Oh, that really does. That really does. You know, one of my favorite ferns is because of its upright growth habit. It's got a little height to it, and I love its like bright green color. It's the ostrich fern. It's a great looking plant. It has this like dissected green kind of look to it with the fronds, and it kind of has that appearance of an ostrich plumage.
Mm-hmm.
So hence the name ostrich fern. Gives you a little bit of height in the garden. You might place that towards the back of some lower growing shade plants, and it gives you that element of dimension, like texture along with height, various heights in the garden. That's so important when we're designing a garden, you know, what grows to certain heights. And you'll typically see the ostrich fern, it hovers around 2 to 3 feet. In some situations, if it really likes where it is, it might be a little taller. Or in some situations, it might be a little lower. You know, it's all about location, location, location. So the ostrich fern is one we're looking for at the local garden centers and nurseries. Another one that I really, really like a lot, and it's the Japanese painted fern. You like to paint, but I know that you can't paint this beautiful look on these fronds that this particular fern can give you. Very, very popular. It has this graceful arching, like spreading form or habit when it grows. And it gets about 18 to 24 inches in height. I have some down in the back of my yard. Very dependable, very cold hardy, and it's there every year. And it has a soft grayish color that's on the fronds. And it's accented by these maroon, kind of like veining rib looks along the foliage. Very, very attractive. It's interesting to say the least. And this pairs up so well with other plants. It's a beautiful, beautiful fern, mm-hmm. The Japanese painted fern. Look for that one at your local garden centers and nurseries.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're going through the plant of the week for you.
And I have a few more to tell you as well.
Let's hear them.
I have a couple other ferns I want to talk about. And one, if you're looking for a little evergreen effect from a fern, you might want to think about the Christmas fern. Clump forming. Gets a foot and a half to 2 foot in height, give or take.
What does clump forming mean?
It's not spreading.
Okay.
You know, it stays well-behaved, upright. It's not a bully, you know, kind of like you take over. you know, you sit on an airliner, you take 3 seats.
Uh-huh.
I'm just kidding, Ernie. Now, you're going to be really mad at me when we go into a break. You'll say, I can't believe you said that.
No.
So, you know, it's an evergreen fern, and it creates a little winter interest in the garden. So that's a different element and aspect of a perennial fern. Look for the Christmas fern. And you like ladies, there's a lady fern.
Oh, beautiful.
Uh-huh. You know, another favorite fern of mine is the tassel fern. Love that fern. It has this robust texture to it. It looks like you could drive over it and it won't smash it, you know, or mat it down. It's just got a really neat look to the foliage, very distinctive. Its stems are kind of hairy. You know, I don't have any hair. You know, Big Dave was getting on me the other day, talking about dandelions, if we can turn it into a hair tonic. And I was challenged. He was challenged.
Well,
I told him to ask you because you always point that out. But
I'm fortunate to have my hair.
I know. Long, pretty lockets. But the tassel fern, you'll like that fern. Look for it at your local garden centers, too. It gets about 2.5 feet in height and about that, you know, same in a spread. Very cold, hardy, tolerant fern. And that's another neat one to have in the garden as well. I like it. I like it. I like it.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
I'm going to tell you about a couple others that I like, and we'll conclude it with our perennial plant, our plant of the week. We're talking about ferns.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. We're talking about the plant of the week. And there are multiple plants of the week today because Tony touched on ferns.
Yeah, the perennial ferns. And I just like I said, I love bloom, don't get me wrong, but I also like texture in the garden.
Yes.
And I primarily have a lot of shade down in the back of my yard, so my yard's a shade garden. And for me, from a shade standpoint, I'm really going for other elements about plants that are just as attractive as blooms, and I'm going for texture. And with that, you get that from ferns. You know, the ferns are very interesting, especially when they start coming up in the early part of the spring and those fronds, those fiddle leaves are starting to unfurl and they're ready to do their thing. It brings about an element of peace in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Just real quiet and
tranquil,
and you're in that shade environment and I can sit down there around my fire pit and I enjoy it. I need to get back down in my yard and do a little bit more work too. So sometimes I talk about my backyard. It once looked a lot better than it does today. And if I ever get down in there and change it up a little bit, I'm going to do my best, especially this year. I need to get down there and work.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple other favorites of mine when it comes to the perennial ferns is you cannot beat this one because it's got a beautiful reddish hue to it, a burnt bronze hue to it. And especially in the new growth, and that is the autumn fern. So hence the name, autumn fern. It has that autumn appearance to it all year, you know, throughout the growing season. And you can't beat this particular fern. I love it. And it's got an interesting look to it that really pairs up well with other plants in the shade garden and other ferns as well because of its various colors. And, you know, another newer one, it's been around for a little bit, is the ghost fern. You believe in ghosts?
I have heard this.
Huh?
I've heard about the ghost fern.
So a little lighter grayish green color on the foliage itself.
Mm-hmm.
It too really looks cool in a mass planting, or it can accent some other things. And don't be afraid to use some of the perennial ferns that we talk about in containers. If you have a shady area that you have shade plants, in a container, and I like mixing the two. Mix annuals with perennials.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to do that. And then later in the season, when you change some things out with your container, then plant the perennial.
Mix it up.
Mix it up. Sir, mix a lot.
That's
mix
right.
It up. Mix it up in the garden. Right, Ernie?
That's exactly right.
But there you have it. The perennial plants, the plant of the week are perennial ferns. You can't go wrong. If you have a shade garden, give them a chance. Give them an opportunity. Go out and adopt one. When I say that, buy it at your local garden center or nursery and take it on home and plant it, and you'll be glad that you did.
Maybe we should have Adopt a Plant Day.
Adopt the plants.
At the independently owned garden centers.
Plant rescue.
Our local leaders. Yeah.
Yeah. What about the plant that gets tossed out at some of the big box stores? That's a plant rescue right there.
Yeah.
But you know what I find out? A lot of times when people come into the garden center, they're always looking for the perfect looking plants.
Mm-hmm.
And they might put 5 or 10 out. And they pick 10 of the best out of the 15. And a lot of times I've always found this out, even with shrubs in particular and perennials, the runt in the group always ends up being the best looking when it grows up.
Yeah.
It does. I don't know why. It seems like when they struggle when they're young, they're stronger when they're older.
I'd like to tell you I was the runt in the family, but that would be a lie.
No, you can't do that. That would be a big lie.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Get to your locally owned, independently operated garden centers today. The Al Sleet AccuGuess forecast is today is going to be rainy and showers, and going to be a great day to get in there, get all the stuff you need, because tomorrow is supposed to be very nice. And then we have a lot of sun coming your way the following week. Following Monday, we will see lots of sunshine for the week. We're also going to see warmer temperatures, too. Tony mentioned just a little while ago about what to look for in the coming week. Tomorrow's high will be 67. Then we'll get to 72, 76, 80, 80 on Thursday, and then 85 by Friday, and lots of sunshine during the week.
85?
85.
See, that's incredible. It's just bottoms up. Top out, whatever.
The roller coaster ride
is on.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? You know, that's from one extreme to the other.
I get on the bike and ride.
What did you say today's high was going to get to?
Today's high is going to be 54.
54 to 85. That's a 30 degree swing.
You're pretty good at math.
Well, not actually. It's a point off right there. But in general, you get it.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Yeah, I want to hone in on, we're getting at the tail end of applying that first step on our lawn with the Fertilume three-step lawn program. And I'm talking about the All Seasons 2 with Prodiamine. To get that maximum protection, we need to get that down and don't put it off.
Gotcha. And it's also Earth Day. We'll talk about some celebrations going on today. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's Earth Day today, a day to celebrate the planet we live on, to take care of her, and trying to make a difference in the world. And a lot of great celebrations going on. One starts at noon out in Blue Ash Summit Park. The theme, of course, local food, which is always important. Activities surrounding home gardening, local foods, and composting. Also, the Earth Day at 10,000 Villages is also going on today. Plant succulents in fair trade pot or mugs. Zoo Blooms is going on at the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden. Party for the Planet. Always looking for a good party. Earth Day celebration, and again, things at the Cincinnati Zoo are great. Crone Conservatory, which Tony mentioned, celebrates the majestic monarch butterfly and the journey that it always makes. Earth Day celebrations will be going on all day today, so make sure you get a chance to get out and enjoy them. And it's also a great opportunity just to do something nice for her.
Absolutely. Every day for me and those in our industry is Earth Day.
It is.
Because every tree counts. Every shrub counts. Every perennial plant, every annual, everything that we plant counts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so important. What's really interesting, too, is if you're on the earthday.org website, you know, here's an interesting stat. And again, this is on their website. The planet is currently losing over 15 billion trees each year, which equates to, this is so interesting, and I didn't know this, that equates to 56 acres of forest lost every minute. So we need to be on our game and get into this reforestation mode of thinking and plant. Every tree counts. And we also talk about the Taking Root initiative here in the Cincinnati area. Every tree counts. Go online, register that tree with Taking Root.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the goal is 2 million trees by the year 2020. It's such an important initiative that we all need to come together as a community and make it happen. We need plants. Can you imagine if this was just a solid rock that we lived on, or if it was all sand or all dirt without any type of plant whatsoever?
We wouldn't be here.
We would not be here. Absolutely. We would not be here. Nor would all of our insects, all of our mammals, our animals, invertebrates, you name it. We would not be here. It's so important to take care of Mother Earth. And if we can do so, and she'll keep rewarding us as kindly as she has for many past years. And we need, it's so important. I'm glad it's celebrated here today. So
from her we came, so shall we return.
That's right. Very well put there.
Thank you.
Did you ever think about being a creative writer or author?
Can't spell.
Well, they have little spell check things for you.
Yeah. So. Good luck with that.
That's right. And you were... Well, you can still spell things wrong or incorrectly with spell check.
The wrong words always show up.
Like the word no, K-N-O-W or mm-hmm. N-O. That yep. can get you, you know.
It can get
what do you,
you in
think
trouble.
When you see that? When somebody writes correspondence and it's something's not in there. You know what I see used incorrectly is there.
Oh, yeah. You just, and your.
Yeah.
Your and your.
That's right.
Your and you are.
Yeah, you There's are and you were. Yeah. Yeah, you ever see? You can always go back and take those remedial classes at any point in time. Don't feel apprehensive about doing so.
No.
You know, you can always learn something from mm-hmm. something like that. Anyway, you were talking about the weather being nice, you know, starting tomorrow and going into next week. And I also want to put this bug in your ear. We're starting to push the envelope. We're getting close to, you know, getting at the tail end of putting down that first application, that first lawn step from Fertilum, the pre-emergent, the one that has prodiamine in it, the one that's going to keep the crabgrass out of your lawn and other broadleaf weeds and things getting in there and making your lawn look ugly. You know, as we start getting into the beginning of May and soil temperatures start getting into the low to mid-60s, you know, crabgrass is making its way into our turf, so we want to keep it out. Nothing uglier than crabgrass because it doesn't look anything near like what the rest of our turf is, you know, which is primarily a tall fescue. It's ugly stuff. It doesn't look good. It's ugly from the road. It's ugly from the sidewalks. It's have a lawn that's envied by other people. Take mm-hmm. care of that lawn. I can't say this enough. When you see somebody's lawn, it looks ugly. That tells me a lot of things.
Unkept.
Mm-hmm. And if that's unkept, there's other things that are unkept. You know, the old saying, tell me who your friends are, I'll tell you who you are.
Yes.
That's why I tell people I don't know you. You know, I'm just kidding.
That's perfect. You know, and then the other thing that when it's unkept, it affects your lawn and your neighbor's lawn.
It does. It really does. And, you know, I think it's almost to me, as simple as this may sound, have you ever seen or run into somebody that's wearing a nice suit and their dress shoes are beat up or they're dirty, not shined? That just takes away from it just blows the whole suit out of the water. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
That bothers me more than anything. Mm-hmm. And so if you take that to the lawn, so to speak, or when you mow your lawn, are you the kind of guy that turns your weed eater, your lawn edger on the side and make a nice edge along the sidewalk or along the garage? Do you really, or are you just saying that?
No, I do.
Yeah, that gives it a nice, detailed look.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That says you take pride in what you do. And nothing more welcoming or better to see than a nice-looking manicured lawn. That's why I like golf courses. They're so well manicured. The greens, the roughs. It's awesome. It's like, you know, you're in somebody's backyard when you're on a golf course. And keep your yard looking nice.
Yes.
It means a lot. It really does. And your landscape, your lawn, your turf, everything makes your house even worth more when you take care of it.
That is the first welcome mat that most of your visitors will see, your lawn. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back,
we'll talk about some color. We're going to end the last half hour of this show talking about some color because annuals are rocking and rolling in the garden centers. And the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about containers, especially because it's still a huge, huge role in all of our lives and what we do around our homes and on the patios and the decks. We're going to talk about thrillers, fillers, and spillers and color that's going to rock your world and your containers.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. The first burst of color is always the thing that lifts everyone's spirit and helps wash away that winter doldrum.
Oh, it always does. It's so uplifting, you know, and everyone's working on these window boxes and their containers, and that's what most people do. You know, it's just one of those things you can change out seasonally as you go throughout the course of the year. And just always adds vibrant color to the home. It's a welcoming element when you have guests and family over and they see these beautiful containers out in the front. Or yet, even hanging baskets, you know, those add a lot of color too around the home. I hope most people that hang those or have really nice substantial brackets or ways to hang things without them getting whipped up and around with the wind and so forth. I hear it all the time with ferns. Everyone loves ferns, too. You know, they put those on the porches, and it makes some of those houses with those big front porches just look so welcoming, and it has that southern look, does it not?
It does. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Tina on the line from Oxford. It's got a question for you. We're talking about weed-free zone earlier in the show, and she wants to know if it works on wild onions. You got a lot of them, Tina?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Tina, it does, and I can attest to that. I've used it on wild onions before because I hear people say I can't get rid of wild onions. And the key to wild onions, I want you to think about this. You know, the onion stem itself, it's kind of a waxy blade.
Yes.
So therefore, when you spray, it repels off. So therefore, it doesn't really have the effect that it needs to have when it repels off because it's not staying or adhering to the waxy blade.
Okay.
I like to bruise onions, step on them, or sometimes take a little block of wood and a mallet. Now, if you have hundreds of these in your yard, it's virtually impossible. You know, it just, if there's just isolated areas, you can certainly do that and bruise them. It just helps the product get into it better. And also, I would use a little bit of a surfactant. And when I say that, there's a product that you can buy. It's a spreader sticker. And it helps facilitate, you know, a couple of things. You know, that product getting into the weed or whatever it is that you're spraying, but it adheres to what you're spraying a lot better. So those are the keys right there.
Okay, so these are not actually in my yard. They're actually in my flower bed. So, like, I have a pom-pom bush, and I have, and I don't know what the name of the other bush is that I have, but it's that real pretty bright yellow bush that blooms in the spring.
Forsythia?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're underneath those.
So they're like right up in it.
Yeah.
So you have to be really, really careful. And that's a tricky situation to be in. You can do it. I wouldn't spray. At this point, what I would try and do is bruise the onions. Or if you can, you know, it's even hard to dig around that root system and that stem, the trunk of those plants.
Right.
You have to be very careful. What you could do is try and bruise those, and this might be an approach that you can take. Mix your solution up in a bucket of water, you know, accordingly. Read the label, as always.
Okay.
And purchase some really good heavy-duty rubber gloves, something that you can use with chemicals that won't penetrate it or break it down.
Okay.
And use a sponge and just lightly wipe it onto those wild onions after you bruise them.
Okay.
See if that helps, okay? I want you to follow up with me. I know that Weed Free Zone will take care of wild onions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You have a wonderful weekend. Thank you.
You do the same.
Thanks. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you jump onto our Facebook page. Look us up and like us. You can always post pictures and post questions there. And we're going to wrap up the rest of the show talking about the beautiful color. Tony posted some gorgeous pictures of plants that are available right now at your independently owned local garden center. And today's going to be a great day to get to it.
Yeah, you know, if it's raining, get to those garden centers that have undercover shopping or greenhouses. It's still pleasant inside. Believe me, these are the days that we like sometimes because it's not so brutal. When you were talking about those 80-degree temperatures coming next week, I can only think what it gets like inside the greenhouses. And it's not always a fun environment, but more often than not, it is, you know, given what the weather situation is like. I know that we have glass houses, and I'm always a little apprehensive about putting shade on the glass a little too early or prematurely because you get into some of these cloudy days, overcast days, and it's not good.
No.
And neither is just hot sunshine without any shade on the glass, too. So it's a fine line to walk. But color, it's all about color. It's all about our containers. It's all about the thriller in the container. And when I talk about thrillers, I did not coin this. Whoever did was so clever.
I did that.
Talking about the approach to, or the elements or the components needed to make for nice containers is using a thriller. A filler and a spiller. So well put.
Thanks.
And I wish I could lay claim to that, but I cannot. But the thriller in your containers is something that gets a little bit more height to it. sometimes. Something that's bold, something that's striking, something that is like Ernie and says, hey, look at me because I'm the attention getter. That's what we call and consider a thriller. To give you an example, a lot of people are familiar with the spike, the green spike. It's kind of a grassy, upright plant that lends itself to that thriller mode in a container. Also, we're seeing a lot more usage with the cordylines, the formiums, as thrillers in containers. I've also seen some very, very large containers that were able to accommodate a lot of plants. And in the middle of some of those, you might find cannas. You might find alocasias, various other types of plants, papyrus, one called King Tut and Little Tut. You got that King Tut Fu Manchu and gut and the Fu Manchu and beer going on over there. King Tut. You know, those are the kind of plants that make for really, really good thrillers.
Now, there is a plant that you may not like. And Barbara from Burlington's on the line, Tony, who's got one that she'd like, I guess, to see a whole lot less of. English tea ivy has taken over an area at her house. Hi, Barbara. How bad is it?
It's pretty bad. I've been fighting it for 2 or 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So
it turns pink as it matures in the summer. I'm not really sure that's the name of it, but...
Is it pretty aggressive, upright, spreading?
Yes.
You know, I'm trying to think of the name of it, because we always joke in our industry, if you ever buy it from us, Houtonia, I think, I'm not even going to pronounce it right.
Bought it at a farmer's market. You know, they were selling it, and it looked so beautiful because it was green, and it had that pretty pink hue, and I thought, oh, this will be, you know, a lovely edge to my garden.
Yeah, it's Houtonia cordata, something like that, or chameleon plant. We always joke, it'll get that pinkish color to it, a reddish color, kind of heart-shaped leaves.
Yes.
And we always joke, if we ever sell you that in the garden center, we should give you a bottle of Roundup.
Very invasive. We've been using Roundup on it, but it just continues to come back. So I heard your comment about the onions. And I'm wondering if bruising it, like, should I step on it first and get it bruised and then spray that on it?
No, I don't think it's really going to make a big difference. You still have enough surface there with the leaf to absorb what it is you're spraying. This is, it spreads by rhizomes, and it's very aggressive. It's a bully. And I need to learn how to pronounce that because it's a funny name to say. However, I would resort to a couple of methods of removing it. One being physically pulling it and digging it out. And every time it starts rearing its ugly face, immediately spray it with a combination of glyphosate and Teflon ester, triclopyr.
Okay.
It's a little tougher. Usually when you get rid of poison ivy, you're using a combination of triclopyr with glyphosate. And it's a little stronger. You might try Roundup's poison ivy killer because it has that combination together.
Okay, and we have some of that.
It's a little
that's good.
It's a little stronger, but you need to physically remove some of that and dig it out and spray anything that starts rearing its ugly face and stay with it, and eventually it will die out and give up.
Okay.
It's
great.
It's really, really, really tough to get rid of. But
it is. It has a tuber-like root to it.
Mm-hmm. It's rhizomes, and it takes over. Where did you buy that?
At a farmer's market.
Yeah. Is it in a moist area, too?
It is.
Yeah, it likes moisture as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go on to, this is interesting too, I always like to talk about various websites, and one of my favorites out there is the Missouri Botanical Garden. And when you're looking up information, and this is for everyone, go to reputable websites or go to university websites on removal of certain things, and you get a lot of valued information. Just everything that you read on the internet is not always true or factual. No, Ernie thinks that it is.
Thank you for your help.
Well, you're welcome.
Good luck. Have and take some photos and post them to our page. We'd love to follow along. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're going to talk a little bit more about color. It's all about color now. It's that time of year.
749-B105. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're celebrating color this weekend. It's Earth Day, and this is a great opportunity for you to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center and pick up some beautiful plants.
Most definitely. Things are really starting to look good. They're coming into their own. They're getting some size on them. Stuff that's been grown locally is really looking top-notch. Everything's not fully yet in bloom, but they're starting to show a lot of color, some blooms. And just to give you an example, one of the hottest items going right now, bar none, I don't care what anyone says, I'll argue this tooth and nail, is the night sky petunia.
That's beautiful.
That is the one that I put on the Facebook page. And it looks like you're looking up into the night sky and you just see these blotches, these stars glistening. How they breed things like that is beyond me. So cool looking. Check it out on our Facebook page. Tell us what you think. But again, it's about color. And color stimulates us, makes us feel good. It makes our homes look beautiful. It makes our backyards come together. You know, it's defining that outdoor living environment. We were talking about our containers. We were talking about the components of designing a container. We were talking about thrillers. We talk about fillers. And we talk about spillers. And we just moments ago talked about some thrillers. Let's talk about a couple good items that fill in as fillers. A couple things that I like, just to throw a few items out there, are coleus as a filler. And a coleus, some of them get quite big, can also be a thriller if you want it to be. But there's so many different coleus out there today. It's incredible. And again, it's a plant that's not really highly touted for its blooms. Mm-hmm. They will get blooms eventually later in the season. And some of the newer coleus, the sun-loving coleus too, have been bred in such a way they're kind of geared not to put on that bloom show as early. So it's a little bit later in the season and you start seeing blooms because we're going for the effects of the color of the foliage. And, boy, I tell you what, the colors of the foliage with coleus is from A to Z. I mean, you have some of those that have that beautiful rust color in it. You have some of those that have the green leaves with, like, deep, like, maroon veining in it. Some of the leaves that are burgundy with a lime green edge. Coleus are all over the board. We can do a whole show on coleus, and not all coleus, like people used to always think and once believed, are shade-loving plants. They thrive in the sun, too. If you want a top performer when it comes to a coleus in the shade, I just lost my train of thought, the name of it.
In the shade.
Oh, no, it'll come to me. It'll come to me.
Well, think about that.
I will. Daggone it. What a moment. It's not a senior one.
Well, I got somebody.
Kong coleus is what I'm trying to think of. Oh, there you go. Kong coleus. There you go. Those are awesome.
That was a senior moment, by the way. I recognize those from experience.
I did get my ARP notification in the mail a couple years ago, so it might have been a senior moment. Yeah.
Tony, we have Missy on the line from Park Hills, who's God bless you, Missy. I just don't envy your problems. Tony, she has honeysuckle bushes and wants to know how to kill them.
Well, that's a whole other topic in itself, but the most effective way to do that is springtime's a good time to go after it because everything's still pushing upward and they're pretty far along actually, you know, with some foliage. They're the ones that you see up on the hillsides and underneath their understory plantings all throughout. But the best way to do it is to take a pruning saw and cut just 4 to 6 inches above the ground. And as soon as you make that cut, pour on it glyphosate, or a combination of triclopyr and glyphosate. Immediately pour that on there, and that gets into it rather quickly. If you wait, it heals over, and you're not as effective. And if anything new comes up around the base of the honeysuckle plant, continue to go after it the same way.
Do you sell this at your store?
Yes, ma'am, we do. Most any of your local garden centers that are Fertilum dealers, We carry the glyphosate product, and it works very effectively. And also, another time to go after it is in the fall. We had Michelle Stanton here. It was last fall from the Extension Services over there in Kenton County. And we talked about going after it in the fall. Season 2 is very effective because at that point in time, all of its energy is starting to translocate downward into the root structure, and it takes that product in a lot more efficiently.
All right. I mean, I've tried everything. I've packed it down. I've used, I know the bad thing is Roundup, but still, they keep coming back.
We'll get you in sync there, and you'll be able to control it.
All right. Tony, what time you close today?
5:30.
All right.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks for the call. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's Dirt Earth Day. Get out and celebrate and help save the planet. Tony and I will be back next week. Have a great weekend.